It's 8 o'clock. You're listening to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. This is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubinick. Researchers with Colorado Parks and Wildlife will be flying over the backcountry in the coming months. Their plan is to study wildlife habitat and conduct a count of big game through the rest of this month and into late March. As the Aspen Times reports, CPW will be flying over large chunks of land as spotters look for big game to count and classify. CPW is also planning to use helicopters to capture some elk, moose, desert bighorn sheep, and Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep, along with around 1,300 mule deer. Radio collars will be attached to those animals, and the data will be used to track some wildlife management projects and studies. According to the Times, CPW hopes the flyover studies and captures will give researchers some idea of how generally healthy big game in the state are. The agency also plans to use the data to get an idea for how many hunting licenses should be issued in the future. It's been a rough season for the coal mines of the North Fork Valley. Last week, Oxbow's Elk Creek mine in Somerset laid off another 115 workers, bringing the total number of jobs cut at that mine this fall to over 250. Even more layoffs could be on the way. A major eastern utility is closing power plants and buying less Colorado coal. That could impact production at Arch Coal's West Elk Mine, just up the road from Somerset. KVNF's Emily Guerin has more.
The blare of the coal trains as they head west through Paonia signals the beginning of a very long journey. From here, the trains that serve the valley's three coal mines head across the Rocky Mountains to their final destination, the southeastern United States. There, much of the coal is burned in power plants owned by the Tennessee Valley Authority, the country's largest public power company. The TVA has been a large buyer of North Fork coal since the early 1990s. Back then, power plants around the country began buying low-sulfur, western coal to meet new requirements under the Clean Air Act. But now, like many utilities, the TVA is beginning to cut the amount of electricity it gets from coal. Duncan Mansfield is a spokesman for the TVA.
Coal in the 70s was as much as 70% of our generation mix. We're now at about 40% or so.
And they're trying to cut that number even further. Eventually, Mansfield says the TVA will only get 20% of its power from coal. Cheap natural gas and stricter environmental regulations are driving the shift. Plus, the TVA's coal plants are old and expensive to maintain.
We have 11 coal plants, and the average age is 51, which isn't too old for a person, but it is for a power plant.
Since TVA is cutting its coal generation in half, it will also buy less coal, especially from Colorado.
The primary reason is the delivered price and the ability to switch to lower cost basins in Powder River and Illinois Basin.
In other words, Colorado coal is too expensive. Surface mines, like those in Wyoming's Powder River Basin, can sell coal more cheaply than underground mines like the ones in the North Fork Valley. Wyoming and Illinois producers have another advantage, too. They have fewer mountains to cross. That's according to industry analyst Bob Burnham.
Getting the coal from, say, Somerset to Denver, it's an expensive haul. It's cost more per mile.
The West Elk Mine, in particular, sells a lot of coal to the TVA. At times, over half of what it produces. But West Elk's TVA contract expires at the end of this year. Arch Coal, which owns the mine, won't say whether it has been renewed. With Oxbow's Elk Creek Mine shut down due to an underground fire, locals are worried about the future of coal in the valley. Aaron Chartier works at Cut and Clip in downtown Paonia and says people are scared.
I just know a lot of people aren't getting their hair done and stuff as much until they know for sure that they have money coming in.
Any problem at the mines affects her, too.
A majority of my clients are, their spouse works there, or even some of the women work there in the warehouses, so it's a huge thing.
This isn't the first time the local mines have laid off workers. In the 80s, hundreds of people lost their jobs when the coal industry busted nationwide. Brad Harding is a former coal miner who is now president of First Colorado National Bank in Paonia. He experienced the layoffs as a young boy when his school class of 60 kids shrunk as miners' families moved away.
We lost a few of our brightest and best students and some of our best athletes in our class, never really recovered in size after that layoff.
You didn't have to be a rocket scientist to know that this place had been devastated.
That's Ed Marston, former publisher of High Country News. Marston also owns a few commercial properties on Grand Avenue in Paonia. He remembers a saying that captured the feel of the town at the time, with its empty homes and shuttered businesses.
Happiness is Paonia in your rearview mirror.
This time around, both men think the layoffs will affect all of Delta County, not just Paonia. Here's Brad Harding again.
You know, the majority of the coal miners used to live right here in Paonia. But over the last 20 years, as I mentioned, many of those guys live down valley, as far away as even Grand Junction, and make the commute every day.
Whatever happens in the North Fork Valley, energy analyst Bob Burnham says Colorado coal faces an uncertain future.
We're in an oversupply situation in the U.S. The utilities know that there is somebody out there that will sell them the coal. The mining companies are scrambling to get their share of the business, and there's no guarantee that they will get it.
Like many people in the valley, Brad Harding is hopeful the area will weather the changes in the coal industry. He thinks a more diverse local economy would help.
I understand that we may be in a transition phase, and hopefully the good days are ahead for the valley as well. And all those employees and families affected by it, I give them my absolute best.
For KVNF, I'm Emily Guerin.
Some miners at the Revenue Virginius mine near Ouray are returning to work to help with a federal investigation there. Mine Safety and Health Administration officials are currently looking into the deaths of two miners there last month. The men were reportedly overcome by carbon monoxide gases inside the mine. Rory Williams of Star Mining, the mine's owner, told Ouray News that all workers there had been given the chance to make some extra money for the holidays. Employees are reportedly assisting IMSHA crews on the surface and underground, with some work happening at the company's business warehouse in the north end of Ouray. Williams told Ouray News that no actual mining production is taking place while the investigation is underway. Three Colorado cities are now facing lawsuits over voter-approved fracking bans. The latest move came this week when Colorado's energy industry trade group announced it's suing Lafayette and Fort Collins, and a lawsuit is already pending against the city of Longmont for a ban approved last year. As Benta Berkland reports, some in the state say a lawsuit is the wrong way to go.
Voters in five Front Range cities have decided to halt fracking. Mike Foote is a Democratic representative from Lafayette, one of the latest communities to pass a ban.
They want to have some say about oil and gas operations in their hometowns, and that's going to require legislation. Certainly people, at least in my district and many other districts around the state, aren't all that happy.
As drilling moves into Front Range communities that haven't experienced it before, concern is rising. Foote says he wishes the industry had found another way to work with people who are worried about impacts to the environment and public health.
And it's a bit unfortunate that the industry has decided to, for lack of a better word, engage the citizens just by suing them.
Democratic Congressman Jared Polis's district encompasses all five communities that have passed restrictions. He called on the industry to drop the lawsuits. He says it shows complete disrespect to the democratic process.
There's been a public debate. There's been a vote. You don't win friends by disregarding a public vote and suing to get your way.
The Colorado Oil and Gas Association says it didn't want to sue, but felt it had no choice. Tisha Schuler is the president of the association, which represents members of the energy industry. She calls the fracking bans regrettable.
Instead of working constructively with the industry and city leaders, extremists have used fear and misinformation to get cities to pass bans, which they know are illegal.
The industry is embarking on a greater push to try and educate the public about the benefits of low-cost domestic energy. Companies also spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to fight the fracking bans. Schuler says oil and gas is crucial to the state's economy.
There are over 100,000 families in Colorado that rely on the oil and gas industry for their livelihoods. These bans effectively stop oil and gas development in those communities.
Schuler says the bans are illegal because the state constitution allows Colorado to develop resources such as oil and gas. Governor John Hickenlooper recently sympathized with industry concerns.
What we've said from the beginning is that Our state constitution guarantees people the right to access their minerals, right? That's a split estate. Our job is to make sure that we work in partnership with the industry.
But his office is stopping short of joining the latest round of industry lawsuits. Colorado is already suing the city of Longmont over the same issue. Democratic Representative Mike Foote says he expects energy policy will once again play a big part of the upcoming legislative session. He plans to sponsor a bill to increase fines against companies for violations. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Capitol coverage is funded by Pikes Peak Center, Colorado Springs. Presenting an evening with Garrison Keillor, the ambassador for Lake Wobegon. Tickets now on sale at all Tickets West locations or pikespeakcenter.com.
And that report comes to us from Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a collaboration of public and radios and community radio stations across the state. On Monday, Delta County Commissioners named two historical landmarks. One of them is Paonia's Bras Hotel, built in 1906, and now a bed and breakfast. The other is the Rogers Mesa Community House, built in the mid-1890s as the Hearst School. The landmark designations, the first to be approved by the county's newly formed Landmark Board, will facilitate recognition by the state and the National Historic Preservation Board. That could lead to increased funding opportunities and provide protection from demolition. That's important to the Modern Women's Club, owners of the Rogers Mesa Community House. KVNF's Marty Derlin has more.
The Colorado Department of Transportation, CDOT, wants to improve safety on the stretch of Highway 92 over Rogers Mesa east into Hotchkiss. As motorists know, the highway is narrow, with 11-foot lanes and almost non-existent shoulders. Intersections like the one at 3100 Road, where the community house is located, need turn lanes. From 2007 through 2011, there were 99 accidents along that stretch of highway, with 10 injuries and one fatality. Up to 8,000 vehicles use the road each day, including heavy truck traffic due to agriculture and the extraction industry. Last April, CDOT held a meeting at the community house to talk about the agency's plans for improving the road. The conversation sparked action from the Modern Women's Club, formed way back in 1907 to provide a social and cultural outlet for the women of Rogers Mesa. The club took over the building 85 years ago, when the school board consolidated outlying schools, and kids at the Hearst School were sent to Lazier, a mile south. Elaine Lee is the Modern Women's Club historian.
I think these ladies were far-thinking ladies. They followed their husbands out here, but most of them came from back east. They had halfway decent educations, and they longed for nicer things in life. And so they banded together and said, you know, this farming, orcharding, ranching, all this is fine, but this is not what women want all the time. And so even though it was just a few hours out of the month or a few hours out of the week, they would get together and talk about what was going on in the world. You know, what kind of music was popular, what sort of painting they liked. Or there has to be some culture there. And they leased it for 35 years. This is amazing. And then in 1963, they were closing all of these schools that were no longer in use, and the school district sold that building to the Modern Women's Club for a dollar. And they called it the Rogers Mesa Community House.
The club has made a lot of improvements to the still humble property, maintaining and upgrading crucial parts of the building through the decades. The building has served many purposes, says Janice Roble Cooper, who grew up nearby.
Sewing things for the war effort. There was a lending library there for a long time. I mean, you know, so you took your books there. It was a roller skating rink. And then I think probably the one thing I remember the most before we all really had telephones, there was a payphone at the community house. And that was really a handy thing.
The community house is still in use, serving as the meeting place for Rogers Mesa Ditch and Water Companies, hosting funerals and events, and of course the Modern Women's Club. In 1929, more than 80 ladies were in the club. Now 25 members strong, they maintain the spirit of their century-old organization. Club President Lou Ann McKay.
I did it in the 70s, and I'll do it now if I have to padlock myself to the front of the building. It's not going down.
We would all be there.
Right. Yeah.
We come from a tree-hugger generation.
For KVNF, I'm Marty Derlin.
You're listening to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. This is regional news for the Western Slope. Stay tuned for the Tuesday morning music mix. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.